This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. In just a moment, a conversation on how families live with Alzheimer's. But in what could be a major turning point in the fight against the disease itself, a research team in London seems to have identified a trigger that may be responsible for the neurodegeneration associated with dementia. In experimenting on mice, the scientists say they've identified a chemical that could prevent the death of brain tissue. It's one piece in the very complicated puzzle. Solving that puzzle may eventually lead to a cure for Alzheimer's. With me on the line now is Dr. Ron Peterson. He's the director of the Mayo Clinic Alzheimer's Disease Research Center, on the very cutting edge of cure research into Alzheimer's. He also sits on the advisory board of the Pat Summit Foundation. Dr. Peterson, it's great to talk to you again.
Hi, John. Good to talk to you.
So where do we stand on the sort of frontier of looking at possible therapies and cures for Alzheimer's right now?
Well, I think we're really at the precipice of perhaps making some real inroads into treatments for the disease. The common thinking today is that there's a particular protein called amyloid that is thought to be a major player in the disease. So the therapies are aimed at two approaches. One is stopping this amyloid from being deposited in the brain, and the other strategy is to clear it once it's in the brain. And there are some good candidate drugs out there and some major clinical trials that are being designed.
What about detection of the amyloid protein and the development of tests for markers that can help us to figure out how much of the protein is too much and how aggressively we have to remove it from the brain to prevent symptoms?
Well, that's a key feature of research right now, John, in terms of trying to identify the disease process as early in the course as possible. So, for example, here at the Mayo Clinic, we're doing a study called the Mayo Clinic Study of Aging. And we're looking at people in the community who are randomly sampled, aging in place, if you will, and we're performing these biomarker tests on them to see how frequently this amyloid protein appears in the brain of otherwise normal people. Because presumably, if these interventions work, you'd want to intervene as early as possible in the process. So a great deal of research right now is being conducted on the frequency and the implication of these biomarkers.
Is the amyloid protein benign but indicates something else that's going on? Or is the amyloid protein itself an actual brain toxin, in a sense, and how difficult would it be to extract from other proteins?
Well, actually, amyloid is a normal protein that's produced in the body. Unfortunately, we don't exactly understand what its true function is. But when the protein is produced, it also then is metabolized, means it gets broken up, digested, and taken out of the system. But when that digestion process goes awry, and it doesn't get metabolized in its normal fashion, a toxic fragment, so-called amyloid beta, is generated, and that gets deposited in the brain, is a sticky, clumping substance that causes destruction of the neighboring nerve cells. So it's when the normal protein gets mismetabolized that it causes the problem.
So that was my last question. So is this a metabolism problem that would mean we focus on the function of, you know, the endocrine system, livers, pancreases, kidneys, that sort of thing? Or is it a dietary issue that you could adjust the inputs of the kinds of foods that you eat that could possibly assist here?
Well, all of those factors probably play a role, but the key problem is the way the protein gets metabolized improperly in the brain. And that's where, if we can adjust those enzymes that cause the cutting or the destroying of the protein and realign them, we might be able to stop the protein from being deposited in the brain.
All right, we'll let you get back to work. I'm sure you have plenty of it today. Dr. Ron Peterson, thanks so much.
Thank you, John. I appreciate the opportunity to visit.
Dr. Ron Peterson is director of the Mayo Clinic Alzheimer's Disease Research Center, and he sits on the advisory board of the Pat Summit Foundation. Alzheimer's heartbreaking symptoms of loss of self and memory raise sharp questions about the functioning of the brain, and those questions may eventually bring a cure. But until then, Alzheimer's is the story of families living through it, living through the loss, the solidarity, the intensity. Alzheimer's compels families to seize on the present moment together and find within each moment a reason for living. It is this part of the Alzheimer's story that had always eluded writer David Shenk until his latest project, Living with Alzheimer's, a film series about the day-to-day miracles of caregiving and companionship as families face the disease. The series features the work of Academy Award-winning directors. David Shenk sat down with us to discuss his new series, which is now online at livingwithalts.org.
As we're trying to cure this awful disease, and I think there's a lot of hope there, there's a lot of promise there, actually. Meanwhile, every year, you know, there we've got 5 million Americans right now who have Alzheimer's disease, about 35 million people worldwide. And my ideal audience here was the family that's just dealing with diagnosis as the beginning. They're staring this very long, dark road, and they're hearing this awful thing that their loved one has Alzheimer's disease, and it kind of feels like life is over for everyone. And I wanted to show them that life is not over. It's a terrible disease, but there is life in the disease, and families do cope. And there are all sorts of different resources out there and mechanisms. And of course, there's love and support and friendship.
Here's one of the films from your project called A Place for Pluto. Let's listen and talk.
The mornings are always the same. In disarray. On doctor's advice, I've begun labeling. I have attempted often to brush my teeth with liquid soap, and on two occasions gargled briefly with rubbing alcohol.
Now that's a selection from A Place for Pluto, certainly one of the darker of the stories. Who directed this and how did you collaborate?
Thank you for asking that question. This film was directed by Steve James. Documentary filmmakers know him as a god of filmmaking. He did Hoop Dreams, which is maybe the most applauded documentary in the last century. And he's done a bunch of others. He's just an absolutely remarkable artist. And he's an example of someone, and three of the four filmmakers fall into this camp, who had not done anything on Alzheimer's before. So I'm just so proud of this film, but also that I'm able to bring Steve James, an artist of his caliber, into this world. And I don't think this is going to be the last time that he does something on Alzheimer's either.
Well, let's hear another clip. And this, again, from a pantheon of filmmakers who really were drawn to this project. Roger Ross Williams, the first black director ever to win an Oscar.
Right.
And that was for his short Music by Prudence. This is called The Remembrance.
My education, I finished high school, a school in Hilton Head. But my education from what I registered in to be, was studying nursing and stuff like that. What am I saying? Oh, remembrance. You see what I tell you? My head is not the right.
How do you keep from crossing a line from that kind of innocent sense of characters to a sort of voyeuristic sense of, ooh, what's going on there? A sense of intensity and kind of like, glad that's not happening to me.
You don't get to this level of artistry unless you just have a tremendous amount of human compassion. So you're really connecting with everyone you're shooting and everyone who's working with you. And so you're kind of getting past the kind of artifice of it. You're just shooting real life.
Well, one of the films here that probably shows most powerfully just how relevant Alzheimer's is to everything that's going on in life is this one called My Little Friends.
We will pair an older adult with a child for about 2 months, I would say. And so that it's four adults with four children. It is very structured. What we'd like to say, it's not the activity. It's about building a relationship. Children see beyond the impairments. They see the person.
Now, this is astounding. First of all, the genesis of the film, how you watched it come together.
Megan Mylan, another Oscar winner, her inspiration was she found out about this amazing facility in Westchester called My Second Home, which pairs a dementia patient with a very young school kid and a preschool kid, and they spend several hours together. And as the director of the center says, the young kids don't see the dementia. They only see the person. They're able to look right past it. So there is a lot that the child is getting, and there's an extraordinary amount that the adult is getting as well.
You know, what is daring about this project is that you attempt to make joyous notes about something that could not be more somber. This short film is called Let the Band Play On.
Oh, there we go.
I've come to understand all you have is the experience, the moment. So what's the point of, like, correcting someone or teach a lesson? Just enjoy the moment.
What's going on in that moment? I can imagine.
Yes.
You tell me.
Well, Emmy winner Naomi Boak directed this film. It takes place on the Upper East Side. It's a residential home for dementia patients. And they have, I think it's a weekly class of ballroom dancing where the spouses come in and they dance together. And there's dance instructors who are actually, you know, very well skilled in getting these elderly and sometimes slower and patients with dementia, you know, which is another challenge. But the music they recognize, and so they kind of snap right into the music and the mood. And many of them have been dancers throughout their lives, so the steps are still there, which is amazing to watch. And as you said, there is joy still to be had in this disease. An awful lot of things go wrong, very, very difficult for the families to experience. But if you're able to kind of pivot your attitude, there's a lot of sweetness in there too.
Well, you've talked so much about the healthcare implications of dementia and Alzheimer's, and those are sobering numbers. But there's also this lesson that I really can't believe you had the courage to go for here, and it is this lesson that if you forget about this obsession of being correct, no, you didn't do that, you did that, no, you missed it here, I'll finish your sentence for you. If you can forget that, what you get is exactly what that person said in the film there. You get life. Life is the experience. Forget about the memory. If you can even do that, it's very intense.
When I give a talk on Alzheimer's disease, if I go on for more than 20 minutes about how terrible it is, someone will stand up in the audience and say, will you please talk about, you know, the warmth and the love that goes on in the families, because, you know, that's part of my experience too. So people have for years asked me to spend more time on this, and I'm glad that we were able to find a project to do it. And for people who are worrying that we're whitewashing it, we're not. You know, there are lots of, as you said, lots of dark things in these films too. But life goes on, and you adapt to life, and you miss the thing you used to have, but you can find a whole new, in some ways, a bigger and in some ways a richer life.
The adaptation is the adventure. David Shank, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
David Shank's new film project is called Living with Alzheimer's. He's also the author of The Forgetting. You can learn more about both at thetakeaway.org.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.